All right, here we are at the Bonobo House. It's another dark green anarchy. Yeah. I am Wombat. I am sitting here with Bonobo. Sitting here with Rambler.
Yeah.
Sitting here with Nechiev. Yeah, we're going with the Aragornist pronunciation. I like saying Nechiev. He likes saying Nechiev. It's like Nitch or Nietzsche or Nietzsche or Nikki or Nike or whatever. That's the current meme going on right now, if you guys are paying attention to the internet.
Is this live or?
Oh, this is. No, it's not live, okay. But this will be unedited.
Okay.
We're Ed Wooding our audio here.
And it's going to be. You're going to put this in Anarchist News?
Yeah, this will be put up on Anarchist News. I am moving away from Facebook.
So that means Kevin Tucker won't hear it, because Kevin can't
talk. Yeah, Kevin Tucker won't hear this. He's too busy tucking his schlong.
Did you see the rant?
Tucking his cap.
He put out a big rant on Twitter.
Tell me about it.
Should I?
Yeah. Like, what is this rant that he put up on Twitter?
Let me pull it up here. But it was a big rant, like, and it was a couple days after Aragorn died, but it was like he just went post lift. Me and John and Freddy Perlman were never down with the post lift. It's just a haven for like nihilists and pedophiles and blah blah blah. More or less. So and then he just goes, and then everybody just kind of laid into him and.
Oh, Kevin, it used to be about the music. You remember when I met you at the Feral Visions Gathering? It used to be about the music.
Yeah, it was this long rant. Let me find it.
Oh, yeah, like, basically, Kevin Tucker, my experience with him was that he was kind of cool, like, on a face-to-face level.
Yeah, we did meet him, like.
We met him, we hung out with him, he would talk low. And we would talk about, like, the meaning of existence and shit like that. And we got along pretty well based off of that kind of conversation. But then as time went on, he let his ego side article kind of dominate, or eco side conversation dominate his thought pattern. And he ended up calling into John and ripping into Black Seed and stuff far more than... you know, even his own critical pattern should have really gone into. Like he almost treats like nihilists and egoists as if they're enemies, far even worse than the capitalists. We're the Jack the Rippers and the other horrible people. We're the Charles Mansons and other. Oh, it's just awful. Awful.
You know, like, what did he say? Egoists? Files,
yeah, he was talking about how like he was never a post nihilist, a post leftist, and post leftism was a haven. I'll put up here, but it's for nihilists and pedophiles.
Jesus.
Seemingly that was a reference to Hawking Bay. I guess that's what he's. And but he said John never was, but I don't know.
What, that John never true. Was a pedophile? I'm not really too sure. And like, he hangs out with 14-year-olds smoking weed. Maybe he does other things. I don't know.
Doesn't Kevin Tucker have a book that discusses ayahuasca tourism?
I wouldn't doubt that at all. He really...
Kevin Tucker's book right there.
He personifies primitivists and primitive cultures in a way that goes beyond. So the good and the bad really... are there for him to pick from. And then, of course, after the fact, then he'll change his views. But, you know, if you, like, are like, oh, yeah, they're, like, 12-year-olds were fucking then, there, Kevin. Did you know, Kevin, that fucking kids can get boners as young as, like, 5 years old? I remember having boners when I was 4. You know, you can get some major sexy grooves going on then.
And I just would point out his white ass has dreadlocks. Cultural appropriation.
Yeah, he's stealing from the culture of the dreadlocks. I don't even know what culture has dreadlocks.
Well, he was
in the... I just remember dirty hair causes dreadlocks, so, you know.
Okay, this is Kevin Tucker on Twitter.
Here we go.
I'll just keep saying it for another decade. If anarchists don't address the rampant individualist currents, then we can't be shocked to see people backslide into fascism. It goes back to Stirner's nonsense tantrums, and it's only more prevalent in the meme world.
Yeah,
we gotta put our foot down.
Oh, here we go. Here's more Kevin Tucker on Twitter. Post-left anarchism is nothing. It never was. It's just a knee-jerk reaction against the moralism of the left. But really, it's just angry libertarians.
And I remember Murray Bookchin had some bullshit slanders against this people sounds like Stirner and Ishii.
Alright. More Kevin Tucker. Which may have been useful when nihilists were fucking shit up in the streets, but the net has only brought out their dirty laundry and made it clear that there is a bastion of pro-pedophile lunatics.
It's about Bookchinning Bookchin here.
Firmly under the anarchist banner. If you use your personal liberty as a baseline, then what is anything? That's frontier ideology, which is why people who have called themselves anti-civ, but have been only incidentally, continue to drift towards eco-fascism, while loudly proclaiming eco-fascism has never existed. Clearly it has. Clearly it does. But in doubling down on reactionism, this is the corner it is in. Anarcho-capitalists and national anarchists are on the rise, and it's becoming clear that post-leftists didn't mean a rejection of the political circus, but indignation over personal freedoms being impinged upon it. So it's just far right.
I like making shit up because I got kids and like I want traditional values like conservatives, but I want to pretend that it's from the primitivists. Whatever, Kevin.
He's still
book shit, but living in the woods.
Anarchism should exist beyond the political spectrum. Not left, not right. This isn't just a rejection of government, but the reality that we don't need organized mass structures to rule our lives. Personal liberty will always be the wrong point of entry. This is about society. And myself, Zerzan and Perlman, are not, nor ever were, post-left. The rejection of the political spectrum comes on its own terms, not defined by sides of it. It follows more directly from Kamate and the ultra-left, communalist in nature without communism. There is a parallel hill for movements emerging from the eco-resistance world, but there's another thread. The point is...
Here I've got to raise my hand and ask, isn't Perlman not even around to speak for whether or not he's down?
I highly doubt that he was back. Tucker on all
day. No, I'm pretty sure Perlman's dead.
I wouldn't think he would agree.
Well, Kevin might dig him up and bring him along for the ride like he's fucking Bernie.
Let me continue. The point is, if you are against civilization, as I am, it should be coming in defense of the world, not to find an opposition to it. We should always fight power in all its forms and iterations, block its passageways, punch its fascists, and those aspiring control. Small problems become big ones, but even big ones are fed by a million lifelines who look small and can be isolated. Resistance takes the form, the same form in all regards. When you identify the problem, choke its bottleneck, and bleed its supply lines.
Oh,
it's praxis. Ooh, praxis.
Snap into a Slim Jim.
It's applicable on every front. None of us are in this alone. Don't embrace the isolation. All right, that's, I can't do that. I'm losing my voice here. So there you go.
That's Kevin, right, because that's how he sounds, really.
Yeah, well, now, you know, he'll probably listen to this and unfriend me.
He might accidentally piss himself, too.
That was a pretty good impersonation.
Yeah, I would agree. So yeah, those aren't familiar. Kevin Tucker is this anarcho-primitivist guy that He's tall.
Primal anarchist.
Primal anarchist. He had to move away from anarcho-primitivist because it's derogatory, even though they've been using it for over 20 years, like over 30 years even.
And he's like culturally appropriating those dreadlocks.
Well, he cut his dreadlocks. He now has normal white people hair, so he's culturally appropriating white people.
He's like, well, he's a white person.
Like, you know, like, culturally appropriating.
It's like throws only there, Jewish guy. But, but really, what I'm saying is that Kevin Tucker, he is somebody that wants to criticize from an extreme, but he is not reaching those extremes, so he has to moralize. It's basically like Robespierre during the French Revolution. They reached a certain extreme and had to pull back, and Robespierre had to kind of try to take control. So instead of him pushing to a radical extreme, he pushed to the moral extreme.
Yeah, because of his such of his opposition to like nihilist post-left egoist stuff, he's more in bed with like the it's going down crowd.
Yeah,
for a while now.
You're right.
And he's in bed with Shane Burley and all those people.
Yeah, he wants their media apparatus to promote his lame extremism, but at the same time, you know, they're looking for any reason to piss all over his dumb ideas. Like, they want to criticize anarcho-primitivism, and those that want to embrace a leftist interpretation of anarcho-primitivism probably should just kill themselves and get it over with, because, like, it's a total misunderstanding of it. And, like, primal anarchy, like my understanding of primal anarchy is probably far more radical than Kevin Tucker. So him saying he's the ideologue of that position is a misinterpretation. Like, the primalness of any type of interpretation, from my understanding, would preclude this moralistic imposition that is really just like a conversation of the modern. More than anything else.
Well, it's the funniest thing being, like, the first, like, primitivist that I met, and I think, I mean, you met the same people, too, actually were also self-identified nihilists.
Yeah, like, I've had conversations with lots of anarcho-primitivists, or primal anarchists, as Kevin Tucker might call himself. I'm not sure what they would embrace his turn of phrase.
Yeah, and I don't know that... It's weird to me that he would speak for Zerzan, because I see them, even though they agree, I see them differently. Like, John seems
they're
to be
not the same
either.
Person. Have you ever seen them in the same room together?
Well, I mean, he just, yeah. I mean, the way, like, I can't imagine him being, post-left, fuck, right? He's critical of some of the same stuff, but it doesn't
well,
seem
well,
like
I know that Zerzan's anti-leftist, as opposed to post-leftist, is critical of the post-left. He's basically critical of the post-left because of the individualism within post-left anarchy. I understand that Kevin Tucker has regular conversations with John before he actually has a real position. So Kevin Tucker's ideas are based off of him trying to gain conformity with his master before he talks.
Well, I do have to say, I mean, you must take a lot of like throat drops, because like, if he's talking like that all the time... That was rough for me that voice. It was just hard to do.
Well, you know,
I appreciate him walking around, Kevin Tucker.
Does he, I don't know if he's the singer of his, what is it, Penguin? I can't remember what his band name is. So his Penguin band, and he's like screaming like, John Zerzan, John Zerzan. I don't know really. I haven't actually heard it, but you know, Penguin sounds like a really good band, I guess.
Yeah.
But, basically, like, I think that, like, Kevin Tucker's primary position is mainly to enforce conformity rather than to explore new ideas. And that's, I think, the primary problem. Like, I personally think the ideas of an immediate return hunter-gatherer society are not bad. I think that it's bad to impose those views on people that are very far from being able to practice it, and then like demand that they practice it, or say, "Oh, it's okay if you don't get it right away, but we're all going to be on the same level as soon as we can. I mean, like, it's nonsense. Like, we, like, can't really get there, and we shouldn't try to be trying to conform within one way or another. We should try to be ourselves, you know, embrace our own freedom where we're at, and then move in whatever direction we want to as we go, not like the other way around, where we're trying to fit a form. Fitting a form is simply trying to conform to a morality rather than embrace a freedom. At least my
that's opinion. Just right-wing libertarianism.
Rothbard, you got me. Text enough already. I'm text enough already.
Do you have any opinions on that?
I know minimal about Kevin Tucker. I know that he was an anarcho-primitivist, and he got into some arguments with somebody I was friends with. I don't talk to as much anymore, but I think that he just employed ad hominems and stuff, and it wasn't really a good interaction. But like I said, I know minimal about Kevin Tucker.
Yeah, he came, him and John came back, like, in 2007, you were there. We had the anarchist gathering when we had a vibrant anarchist community when I was living in Toledo.
That was pretty good, too.
Oh, I thought it was good.
I think I might have been there. Yeah, though, like, because this is the first time I heard John, and it's like, that's kind of where I get my impression of John speaking, and how you just got to get this guy a microphone. He's such a quiet talker.
I thought that whole
and there was the fucking Chomsky guy there who was like passing out the John's Erzin population die off.
It was a kid. Who was that kid? It was a kid from like Oak Harbor, Port Clinton. What the hell is his name? Matt. We'd always call him Cop Matt. And he printed out these things like, who is Chomsky? Printed out, who is Erzin? And I remember Erzin was eating soup. And he's like, I need something to wipe my hands with. And he wiped his hand with the kid's flyer.
Oh.
And he kind of winks at me and throws it in the fire. I'm like, And then that kid, like, Cop Matt comes up to me. And he's, like, arguing with me and my friend. And we're like, why are you arguing with us? Like, they're right here. You finally get to argue with John. It's like, but you're more reasonable. I'm like, well, that's only because I know you, and I'm it's easier to put up with your shit. And they don't want to deal with you, you know? Like, and you're just some crazy kid that they don't fucking know.
No, John Zerzan.
I'm like, they're right there. You can talk to them. Why are you following us around, asking us questions? They're there. There's your big fucking moment. You prouted out your fucking flyers. And like, and then he's like, well, they're unreasonable, man, because they don't want to argue with you because you're some dumbass kid and they don't know you.
Yeah.
No, I remember him looking up over one of the flyers and being like, well, I'm John Zerzan.
John Zerzan collected a lot of firewood in that gathering. And
yeah, I do remember. I remember we were getting wood and he had this big tree branch. I just remember he was pulling it across the field. And I'm like, I was, wow, that's what John Zerzan is, pulling a tree branch. And oh my god, it was so. And then
it's
I always pictured
him sounding louder and angrier than he did, and then, I'm John Zerzan.
and then it was like me and him and my friend talking with what's the woman who does the Labadee collection? What's her name? I can't think of her name. And they were talking about Ted Kaczynski's writing. He's like, oh, did you get some of Ted's writing? And I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe this is happening. I'm sitting here with the Labadee collection woman, Jazzers, and talking about Ted's writings. And it's like, trying to like, you know, just be like, oh yeah, sure, Ted's writings are in the Labadee collection. Oh, yeah, I knew that. Big deal, you know, so what? And I'm just like, yeah, I was kind of, I thought the whole thing went really well, and then
I would agree. We even had Freddie Perlman's wife there, or whatever her name was.
Yeah, Lorraine Perlman. Yeah, that's what it was. It was the woman from the Labadee collection. I can't think of her name. I saw her in Ann Arbor like last year, and then Lorraine Perlman, who brought a bunch of red and black books, and Zerzan, and we were all sitting there, and I was just like trying to be like, oh yeah, sure, this, you know.
So yeah, like we've had positive engagements with John and Kevin, And what's funny is
but yeah, based that, on meeting Kevin, hearing that like, rant was disappointing.
From what I understand, like Kevin and John's interpretations are largely based off of these very brief encounters with like kind of like anarchist trolls, I guess. That's all right. I could really like. Where else are they coming from? Because they're not like actually talking about a person most of the time, other than maybe Aragorn. And right. Even when they talk about Aragorn, they're not engaging his ideas. They're engaging this characterization of nihilists or egoists.
Right, rather and they're than not really talking ideas. To him. I mean, well, they did a little bit when Kevin originally was on Facebook. Him and Aragorn would go back and forth on Facebook. And then one or the other unfriended the other. This was a couple of years back.
Well, for that matter, I was, like, laughing about something about John, like, the last time I'd actually seen Aragorn. Like, I guess I was kind of getting overzealous with it, which I did, but Aragorn was quick to point out, like, oh, me and John are friends. Like,
yeah, I don't know that there was ever really, or is a beef with them, really. John, I mean, like, it seemed to mostly be with Kevin. I mean, I don't know. But it always seems strange to me, like, that, like, I mean, John came out of the post-left and the Yoda stuff, and he knows all those folks. You see, you think, like, you know, if there was an issue, you would have known that a long time ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you basically came out of or alongside that whole milieu, so if there were disagreements, I would just think he was just talking to both of you and Jason Wood all the fucking, every day at some point, right? He just knew him, because he knows them all. And, I mean, I don't know how much he talks to him now, but I would just think, like, they would have hashed that out 20 years ago. Like,
yeah, well,
it just seems...
what was it? Barbaric Thoughts kind of implies that that didn't occur, like, at least from Wolfie's standpoint.
Right.
Like, Wolfie kind of wrote the Barbaric Thoughts where he was trying to engage John from a vague standpoint. It was disappointing because... I'm not trying to be a critic of Wolfie Landstreicher, but it seemed like they weren't working off substance. They were working off of personal feud. They're working off of their interpretations of each other's personalities and the ideas that they thought each other held, which weren't necessarily true or not true. But from what I understood from the Barbaric Thoughts, was... that, you know, basically the divide was based off of desire versus science in a kind of way, almost like the divide between Evola and Hitler, you know?
right.
You know, like the divide, like the science of natural supremacy or white supremacy versus the will to that bullshit. So, like, I thought that, like, the divide was...
And Zerzan would be Hitler and Wolfie would be Ebola. That's not what you're implying.
Yeah, basically, Wolfie's Ebola and Hitler is Zerzan. Yeah, so, yeah,
Zerzan. Who are you calling an eco-fascist?
But they are in the same lump in that kind of perspective. So, yeah, sure. Yeah, Zerzan is Hitler, and it makes sense. So, like, let's just go ahead and tell everybody that.
God, the social anarchists are going to get this. All
right,
do we want to talk a little bit about Aragorn?
Aragorn. This is really supposed to be a memorial here in Ohio for Aragorn. We understand that the West Coast is going to come up with their own thing. We don't have his body right now, so we can't tell you what we're going to do with it. But if we had his body right now, we'd probably roll him into joints and smoke him. Because, or at least I would. I would smoke the hell out of him. I'll take it down.
I'm just like you! No, I don't want to hear eco-fascist drug out hippy-dippy bullshit!
Dude, like, I mean, he was straight edge. I didn't get anything off that.
Right, well, you know, I'm not going to get high off of it, but his ideas
it's a ceremonial thing.
Yeah, it's a ceremonial thing. You gotta fucking appreciate. But not really, you know. Like, maybe appreciate, like, we could, like, pee on him and, like, get a prostitute to drink him. I don't know.
Like, it's just... Yeah, the old G.G. Allen, like a G.G. Allen female there, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. Like a true nihilist thing. Or, like, pour coffee all over him and then put cigarettes out in his ashes. You know, like that would be a very true nihilist way to go out. That was something I was thinking about as it's coming up here. I was like, yeah, we could just, like, you know, pour out a cup of coffee for him and then put cigarettes out in it, and bam, nihilism right there. We're like Camus in his ass.
Yeah. So does anybody have any Aragorn stories, their best Aragorn stories, Aragorn memories?
I guess my main Aragorn story is the length of time that me and Aragorn interacted. I think after InfoShop.org, we talked a lot about Anarchist News, and I was his first moderator outside of himself to regularly participate on the site. And for close to a decade, we worked together, and it was mainly just me and him on that particular site. So we interacted on a, if not daily, then weekly basis on that. And then I had a falling out based off of me wanting to have my personality a little bit more involved in the site. I wanted people to know that HP Wombat is banning your punk ass. You know, and really, like, he was like, no, like, I want, you know, personality to be erased. I want neutral arbitrators to interact on the site, not have a bunch of people. And at this point, I agree. I think that if I would have been doing it, the site probably would have went down a lot faster. And, I mean, it's not down now. You know, it's still going. It's actually going strong. So I agree that if we would have went my direction, it probably would have destroyed Anarchist News at some point, because you would have had HP Wombat running around. So I have to agree with him on that.
We'd be left with fucking It's Going Down.
But I stepped down after a while, and after I stepped down, I trolled the shit out of the site for probably about as long as I was administrator. So, you know, probably about 5 years I was, or more than 5 years I was administrator, but probably close to 5 years after that, I trolled it. But I wasn't the hardest troll, but I was probably the meanest.
You were good at that. You did good sock puppets. You did fool me once. You were an actual syndicalist. I forget what name you were using while we were in that argument.
Yeah, and when I reveal myself, then, people understand, but I usually didn't reveal myself, and a lot of times I was pretty vicious, but then when he got his new administrators in, and they started erasing comments, they started erasing my comments more than anybody else, and they started acting like they didn't erase comments, and I was like, no, you guys erase mine, like, every day. So when you say you don't really erase comments, that's a lie. So I was kind of disappointed on that. But I didn't blame him for it, because a lot of times it was, you know, I was saying some horrible shit. Like some, I was being a total turd. But as far as Aragorn is concerned on that, like, he had moved his personality and himself away from Anarchist News and into his more creative projects like The Brilliant and later Anarchy Bane, and he put more effort into Black Seed, and with Black Seed, that's actually where I started working on being more imposed with anarcho-primitivism, because I started thinking that there's a better way or a different way to interpret anarcho-primitivism than what Zerzan and Kevin Tucker were doing.
Right.
But at the same time, I wasn't trying to be oppositional. I was trying to be part of the conversation. But then when Kevin Tucker got on Facebook and started being a dick, I was like, you know what? Go fuck yourself. And and so that was the end of that, as far as me trying to be a part of a greater conversation in anarcho-primitivism, and me deciding that anarcho-primitivism is an ideology until those two pass on. They need to die. After they die, then anarcho-primitivism probably can be a more interesting conception of ideas. Like, we have, what was her name? There's a female...
Layla Abdul-Rahim? Huh? Are you thinking of Layla Abdul-Rahim? Is that your name?
I think that's her, yeah. Like, yeah. She's an anarcho-primitivist, but she's not a Zerzanian anarcho-primitivist.
Yeah, yeah. I think she's a vegan. There was an interview with her in the backwoods. So, yeah, she's...
Was somebody talking about a primitivist and a vegan that was on an episode of the Brilliant?
We're talking about a vegan primitivist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rhea Del Montana?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
that's the name, yeah.
There was Layla Del Rahim and Rhea Del Montana. They're both kind of the spokeswomen for vegan anarcho-primitivism. But I thought Layla Del Rahim was on the Brilliant too. I'm
pretty sure she got it. Dude, I myself didn't hear it. And it's not because I wasn't trying to hear it, but largely because I listen to audio is while I'm working. And I probably didn't catch that one because the Brilliant and Anarchy Radio, they both kind of talk at a lower volume. And it doesn't.
The volume tended to jump on my own computer.
Sorry.
Like, some of them were louder than others. Like, some of the volume seemed to be all over the place. Like,
yeah, like, it really depends on the person talking to kind of enhance the volume. And then you have your sound operators that can change it. But usually the fixed volume that they have it at is good enough. But if they're talking away from the mic, or if they are... talking low in a low voice or whatever, then you can't hear them.
Yeah, because I'm impatient with podcasts. Like, I'll have them on either while I'm doing chores or while I'm showering around my place, and I'll be listening to them while doing another task to make that other task more tolerable. This tends to be the way I interact with internet audio myself.
So to get back in Aragorn, this is a memorial for him. We love Aragorn here in Ohio. We wish he was here with us, and we wish we would have had more events with him out in the open, like, not just like anarchists, but like, you know, more specific, like, you know, like I like the dark green anarchy flag in a kind of way, but not, it doesn't have to be underneath that, but, you know, something that says what we are. Like, it could have been like post-left nihilist egoist, or it could have been, you know, like Friends of Aragorn, even, you know, something that would have spoke a little more deeper in town or in the state.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I remembered going on the I think it was one of the times he was here to speak. I remembered going on one of our track walks with him, and we were sitting there smoking a joint. We were walking along the track. I mean, Aragorn straight head, so he was
smoking.
Like, we went and went to the old BLD to show that to Aragorn.
Yeah, the BLD is this building in Columbus that was an abandoned building, but artist kids had occupied it and turned it into an art space until someone, when they were doing shows, someone narked them out to the cops, and next thing you know, they got the building closed. Thank you very much.
Yay. Fucking.
Always appreciate those people that want to tell power to authority. Or truth to power. Oh, no, power to authority. That's what I really meant.
Yeah.
But, Aragorn, he was, something else. He was above the fray, the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
He was a better person than most other people. Not in the sense that, like, he was, like, better, but, you know, like, he tried harder. He wanted things to happen.
He has the distinction of being, like, the only podcast I regularly listen to. I'm very impatient with the internet, but I like this stuff enough that I would, like, regularly tune in.
And I regularly listen to it, not in the sense that I was listening to it because a friend had made a podcast, but because his podcast was superior to other podcasts and other audios.
Yeah.
And
it was definitely the best anarchist podcast ever.
And it's disappointing. I know that this podcast is not at all on par with that. This is the Ed Wood interpretation of anarchy. One shot take. Let's make this shit happen. Blah, blah, blah. We ain't trying to edit this shit. We're just
putting it out. You can't even get the real Kevin Tucker. Come on. You have to
have
somebody.
Like, if we're going to do a Kevin Tucker thing.
I'm real.
I'm gonna like do like a Billy on the Streets kind of approach to Kevin Tucker, you know, just come up in his face and start asking a bunch of hard questions and see what happens. I'll have my audio playing and see if I get him to punch me, because he is bigger than me.
What are you trying to say? I'm fake. I'm real. I'm right here.
I wonder how real he is though, because I know how to fight. So like usually after a person throws a punch, I know if I can beat him or not, but not beforehand. Usually a bigger person before me, I'm scared of. But after they throw a punch, and if they fail at hitting me correctly, and don't fuck me up, then I'm like, oh, okay, you suck at fighting.
See, I'm like Homer Simpson. I just absorb blows until someone gets tired, and then I punch.
So yeah, Aragorn, we will miss you. We want to meet you someday in the afterlife. So maybe in 40 years we'll meet you, maybe in 2 seconds, I don't know. Maybe I'll drink this and I'll choke on some vomit after I throw up, and we'll be there with you.
I've drank a lot of beers today, so shit.
I'm sure that it's better up there where you are, or down there, probably down there. let's just, even though, like, you know, I don't like Western interpretations of shit, let's go to hell. Let's just say you're down in hell, just roasting, waiting for us to show up, just boning up. And you're like, hey, I'd like to see those guys this again, because it's hot down here. But,
he's in hell with the pedophiles.
Yeah, all the pedophiles down there. They're like, when is Hawking Bay gonna die? Is it gonna be at 200?
He's down there with Epstein. Burning in hell.
Epstein didn't kill himself. Paterno scum.
He's still gonna unfriend me when he hears this.
But,
that's for our Facebook friendship. That's done.
But yeah, like, we will always miss Aragorn, and I always want to be there with him, and I hope that he comes with us in, as a ghost at some point, because it would be far more interesting to do this show with some dude just a little overweight, smelling a tiny bit, heavily breathing, because like that makes everything better.
You can hear it now, because I'm obviously not the biggest fan of the world of public speaking, but tried to coax me to call into the Anarchy Bang show a few times, but I'm just like, you know, I'm nervous enough sitting here with us doing this blah blah blahing like with my voice rather than the keyboard.
Yeah, I love Aragorn, and I think that his amount of attempt to get people that aren't really extroverts to get involved in media, especially audio media, was exceptional. Like, you can't really go beyond that. Like, it's hard to do audio. For this show, though, it's not so hard. This is just us talking, and you can see my phone recording shit.
No, I'm doing better, like, because we've been doing this for years, and, like, I, like, compared to when we first got our start, like, I felt like I was going to shit my pants trying to do this stuff when we first got our start.
If I was in a studio, there's mics all around, I'd feel a little guarded, a little defensive. I wouldn't be trying to hold back, I would be doing the opposite. I'd be trying to hold back from saying anything that would be construed as offensive or uncaring. But this is largely my show, so I get to be an asshole, and that's what the, you know, I'm going to suffer the consequences at some point. Maybe someone will punch me, you know, maybe I can hope for that.
Yeah.
All right, so we love you, Aragorn, and we're going to continue on to another segment. Like, we're going to keep this one going long.
It feels like, you know, I mean, I'm out of... Well, there's still a little beer left in here. It feels weird to toast to the straight edge.
Do you have anything to say about Aragorn?
About Aragorn, I had a lot of admiration for him. We didn't always see eye to eye. I know he had a very attitude critical of academia, and I never really had enough of an opportunity to explore that perspective with him. I know he wasn't very fond of, like, postmodern philosophers, and that kind of goes into the attitude he had that was critical of academia, and he had other perspectives that I didn't get to explore to the extent that I would have wanted to, but like I said, I always had a lot of admiration for him. He was working on a book for Little Black Heart that consisted of controversial opinions held by anarchists, and I was going to write an essay about the relationship between anarchy and violence, and it was going to be promotional of violence, but I didn't feel knowledgeable enough or qualified to really submit my work for that essay, for that book. I wish Little Blackheart well. I hope it continues to do well post Aragorn, and rest in peace, Aragorn.
Rest in peace, Aragorn.
Woo! Yeah, rest in peace, Aragorn.
It's like weird because one of my more lefty social anarchist friends actually, he had put it left rest in power. He was respectful about it, but somebody chimes in like one of the first comments I'd heard talking shit was like, "Well, he put out that fascist like a tizer." I made a comment. I had to decide whether or not I was just gonna do the classy thing, which I chose to do the classy thing of like talk shit about this dude. Like, what the fuck have you contributed other than maybe like I'm gonna dark you out to cancel culture, you fucking piece of shit. Like, but I just more or less was like, yeah, I kind of off to the side mentioned like how much he had done for just, I fucking hate wording it this way, but the milieu, because that's the way I worded it in general. Yeah, so I'm talking about like all the shit he'd done, like not created, but at least contributed to or created for anarchist stuff, like the infrastructures of the anarchist library, Little Black Car, which this is little like, and I'm like, yeah, the thanks he got for it was being attacked for things like having published Atossa, which you kind of get.
And for me, like, Atossa is like a very minor publication in the whole breadth of all the publications that he had allowed, and for people to fixate on that. And for
me, he was tired of hearing about it.
Atossa, really should have just been almost a no-mention zine. Yeah. Like, it was interesting in the sense that it had a few good articles in both issues. There was only two issues released. A few good articles, but they weren't anything that was groundbreaking. They didn't shatter conceptions on anything, and they weren't aiming to do that either. And for people to have turned it into that, really speaks volumes of the amount that nobody really read the fucking thing. And I would like to actually go more into what Atas actually said, as well as Theod's communiques. I would like to go more into those, just for the fact that these people don't actually read these things and don't understand them, and that maybe we should try to at least expose what was said, not necessarily agree with them. I don't agree with Atossa, but I also, at the same time,
I've never read Atossa.
I want to read more of them.
Skimmed through at least a couple ITS communiques. I've never actually read Atossa. I've read the description of it, though. And anything, like, at best, like, if I were to respond just based on the description, like, you know, like, if you were to go with the characterization of it, like, indiscriminate violence is not the same thing as fascism. Like, fascism is very discriminate, systematic violence.
It's the same leftist bullshit that equates...
Yeah.
It's the same leftist bullshit that equates misanthropy with white supremacy.
Yeah.
It's not even worth dignifying with a response.
Or every time somebody brings up population, somebody says Malthus.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about Malthus Nechev?
He thought that there was a linear relationship between population growth and how it would deal with the food supply, but I don't really feel qualified to give an elaborate opinion of Malthus.
I don't know a great deal, but he was also, I wanted to say a priest, but it might have been preacher. I don't know if priest is the right word. And he had a whole, like, so there was religion tied into it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
But not necessarily every argument about population is Malthusian. Because there's, like, ecological footprints. So, like, Ari, if you bring up population, like, another thing people like to try to accuse you of is that you're racist. But you could be bringing up population with, like, consumption patterns. And it would be like, ooh, I'm talking shit about white Americans, motherfucker. Not that I'm, like, trying to single, like, white Americans out as being particularly bad. But if you're going by consumption patterns, like, there's... Like, every one of, like, an American is equal to, like, I don't know, 10 Chinese people or something. I'm pulling that number out of my ass, but...
Yeah.
Like...
And then you could, like, try to refine it even more and say one rich person is worth about 1,000 poor people or whatever. And, the consumption patterns can be broken down in those kind of manners, but... If we were, like, and this is something actually I learned from Zuru Zen, if we were just going with just pure agriculture without any class breakdown, any breakdown whatsoever, and just went with pure agricultural societies that didn't try to raise above subsistence, you're still dealing with a continual decline towards a collapse.
Yeah.
And and that's why it makes sense that, you know, that societies have always collapsed, and that it should be embraced rather than constantly thought to overcome. Because the more they're overcome, or the more that it's thought,
the worse the collapse is going to be.
Yeah, the worse the collapse is going to be. You know, when before the collapse would be, oh yeah, I fucked my farm. Let's leave and go hunt somewhere. And everybody just leave. Now it's going to be
right now. The collapse is going to be like, oh shit, nuclear power plants are melting down.
There's going to be wars going on and bombs dropped so that that doesn't happen, but it still happened despite the fact. Yeah, you know, like there's all sorts of horrors that will occur, and you can't stop it. And
favorite statistic is the nuclear power plants. Like, is that's one of the worst ones.
And we can hope for the worker state to finally rise up, but the worker state has had its chance, or if you want to say the communist state that will end all class society. But then you have the imposition of work that's going to continue, which is really, that is the dictatorship of proletarians, the dictatorship of guys that think they should be working. And, you know, I don't want that. I don't want to live in a society that is telling me what to do. You know, I want to live in a world where I get to choose how I want to live and face the consequences based off of that. Not the consequences of man to man, but man to nature. But, you know, we are in a society of high population, so maybe even that, you know, but not mediated by an authoritarian social structure.
I'm trying to think of a name for the type of puzzle I was trying to think that we're sort of stuck in. I mean, damned if you do, damned if you don't tends to be the shorthand for what I think we're stuck in. But, like, there's some kind of puzzle that's in the back of my brain for what, like, our lives are like.
Okay.
I'm trying to, like, call this to mind.
Okay.
And I can't call this to mind, so I'm just, like, meeting with a
silence. When you think of it, smoke a bowl and then talk about it.
Where's this bowl? I mean, I'm drinking a...
Well, drink a beer, I guess, since we don't have a bowl. Alright, so... I guess we're getting close to the hour. We got 10 more minutes. I wanna keep it going up until then.
Do you have a specific question you wanna ask me?
Yeah, I wanna know. Let's go into some of the ideas that you've been looking into here lately, Nechev. Can you kind of go into what is the relevance of Andrew Culp's ideas to anarchy, I guess, would be a good start.
Well, Andrew Culp adopts the periodization that Aragorn was known for popularizing between the first wave and second wave anarchists. Hostis, which Andrew Culp contributes to, is... they're sympathetic to that periodization, and there might be minor disagreements on the details. He said, our alternative institutions are war machines and not organs of a new society. It's kind of like borderline nihilist. They don't call them hostages, they call themselves nihilists, but they're happy to be lumped in with that category. But they don't shy away from using the term communist or communization. Communism for them is the generalizing of the circumstances of revolt. It's not like anything Marxist. It's, it's very much based on Tikkun and the Invisible Committee and their contributions to communization theory. I think, didn't Little Black Heart do Hostis?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's even part of Ardent Press, which is Aragorn's personal, like, nihilist anarchist wing of the Little Black Heart larger project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're hoping to get Andrew Culp to visit Bowling Green, Ohio sometime this year. We look forward to that. Yeah.
Alright. So, with Andrew Culp, let's go a little bit into that since, alright, so Andrew Culp, as far as the anarchist subjectivity in his ideas, are we still dealing with a small affinity group structure that's interacting with a greater society kind of understanding of anarchy in his conception, or are we talking about another? Because, you know, the IWW's version of anarchy isn't at all small groups,
right?
It's,
yeah,
industrial groups.
Yeah, I'm much like Hostis, I'm minimally sympathetic to syndicalism. I don't think it's really the appropriate strategy in the 21st century. In a post-Fordist economy. I know the Invisible Committee and Tikkun are sympathetic to affinity groups and what they call friendship and the formation of communes and collective living arrangements that would build relationships of trust and friendship that would eventually come into a combat with the larger society of state and capital. I don't know if Culp is 100% sympathetic to that view, but yeah, it's not so much seeking out prefigurative institutions that will deal with dual power like earlier anarchists did, or how something Marxist might do.
I think that what Hostis put out a position about the way society would engage people in a kind of way. It was like, I can't, it wasn't hostile, it was, it's another term. It was like the second book, I think.
Okay, the first issue of Hostis was an endorsement of the politics of cruelty.
Cruelty, yeah.
The second issue was Beyond Recognition, which is it's either like a counter-argument or refutation of the Hegelian dialectic. I think it opts in favor of a Nietzschean perspective or a Deleuzian perspective as an alternative to the Hegelian or Marxist dialectic. Hostis seeks to communicate in a form recognized by all, but as far as engaging the enemy as a negation, it doesn't seek out recognition.
All right. So, Anchor, the format we're using to record this with is warning me that we need to stop recording since we're hitting close to the hour. They only record up to an hour. We're going to continue these conversations up here with Bowling Green. And we're Columbus folk, even though I'm about ready to move on out. Most people know that I've been thinking about moving away from Columbus. So, like, I've talked about it in the, on the previous episodes, so we will continue talking about this, and hopefully, Andrew Culp will come into Ohio, because I hope to come up and, at least, record and or engage him in some conversations. I know that he has an individual take on, Deleuze more than most.
Yeah, he has an alternative take on Deleuze. Deleuze is often associated with joy and the canon of joy, but he has a much darker interpretation of Deleuze as, cultivating a hatred of this world and everything that's intolerable about society.
Yeah.
So he's a Deleuze scholar, and I recommend checking out his book, Dark Deleuze. It explores this in great detail.
Yeah, so check that out. Andrew Culp's Dark Deleuze, the Hostis Project. There's at least, two or three?
Two issues as of right now. Beyond Recognition is the second one. The first one is an endorsement of the politics of cruelty.
And so check those out, and they are all offered off of Little Black Card, is that correct?
Yeah. I'll post a link for some of the talks Culp gave on Hostis and some of his individual work he has done as a professor.
There we go. All right, y'all. Everybody, stay tight. We will continue this particular show. Though, after this show, I will be ending the first season of the show because I'm going to try to enhance the format, maybe? I don't know. I've already been thinking about how I'm going to do shows after this, and therefore it makes sense to end it after the show for this particular season. So, this is the last season one episode.
I think we should, for this podcast that we're working on right now, I think we should do some scripted material instead of solely just improvised talking. I think that's something we should consider so we can have more methodical, premeditated conversations about how we want to articulate what we're talking about.
That makes a lot of sense to me, and I think that's what we're going to try to incorporate. All right, everybody, we're going to let y'all go and hope to hear from y'all later. You can reach us through the Anarchist News website, anarchistnews.org, because this is the only place I'm going to publish this particular episode, and I shut down the Facebook pages. So that's the only place you're going to reach us. Maybe later we'll have a better way for you to engage us. Alright, so Wombat out, Bonobo out, Rambler out,
what about me?
Netchiev out.
Netchiev out. Scream and shout.